we're back again. Dude, oh, Hambo, just do it. Just do it for me.
All right. Hey, everybody. We're back with another episode of My Thai Happy Hour. I am John Hambo McGuire. That is George Coroneos. Coroneos. And we are here to come in. Expand your earballs, blow your mind a little bit, and tell you all about the cool stuff that we watched in pop culture this week. It was mostly me. I had a very good TV week, and I can't wait to tell you about it. I watched You Can't Kill David Arquette. It premiered online, so you can pay $5 to watch it. I watched it on Amazon, and I've got a lot of thoughts on that. The Babysitter Killer Queen hit Netflix last week, and I love the first one, and I've got some thoughts on the second one as well. I watched Mulan. You're welcome. So you don't have to. So I took that bullet for all of you. Watch Mulan. I've definitely got some thoughts on that. And finally, something cool and fun happened on Netflix the other night. Popped onto my radar thanks to our friend Matt Giaquinto. Alive. Hashtag Alive on Netflix. A fantastic zombie movie for the times we're living in right now. But before we get into that, I have a cocktail. And George, you sound like you could use one.
I'm going to rant first. You know what the problem is with working from home, Hambone?
What?
The problem is strictly it just doesn't end. It doesn't end. I literally just crawled out of my office on all fours after I don't even remember if I had lunch yet. I kind of remember a breakfast.
Oh no, are you hangry?
But no, I'm not hangry. I have been trying to go downstairs and eat as often as I possibly can. But it just the work doesn't end. Now, I know, look, I'm gainfully employed. I'm very happy about that. You know, a lot of people aren't right now. But, Lord, buddy, it was a announcement day for a certain company whose name might be, you know, rhyme or be kind of a fruit flavor or a fruit-ish creation. And it just was like just relentless press releases, approvals, begging people for stuff. It hurt, Hambone. It hurt. I'm in pain. I'm going to be kind of punch drunk tonight. I just want to let you know that I'm not going to be mean. I can't be mean to Hambone. But I'm just going to, if I can't remember the name of an actor, just find it. Just find it.
I'll play through. Don't worry about it, buddy. I got enough energy for the both of us.
But you go cocktail us while I go and make sure that I shut off the dehumidifier, because I always forget to shut that thing off and then it makes noises for no reason because, you know, I'm humid like that.
You are humid like that. And what I'm going to do is make the cocktail for you now, George, because you sound like you could use one this week. I wanted to do a killer cocktail in honor of the movie The Babysitter Killer Queen. So this recipe comes from Difference Guide. I found it online when I Googled killer and cocktail in the same sentence. Now, this is served in a rocks glass, so make sure you get your nice heavy rocks glass out and ready for some rock and roll. You're going to put in 1.5 ounces of Di Serrano Amaretto. You're going to put a full ounce of dry gin in there, and I recommend Aviator. If you're going to do gin, do it right with Aviator. 1/3 ounce of Italian red bitter liqueur. Now, if you don't happen to have it or you're not sure of what brand to get, a slow gin would do the trick. 1/3 ounce of passion fruit syrup, Libra & Co., always. 1/4 ounce of lemon juice. Make sure you freshly squeeze that sumbitch. You do not want to put the fake stuff in a drink like this. Give it the respect it deserves. Squeeze that lemon. So what you're going to do is you're going to pop all the ingredients into a shaker with ice, and you are going to shake it and strain it into a glass filled with crushed ice. Always recommend crushed ice for a cocktail like this. If not crushed ice, next best thing, a big old chunky ice cube. And you can buy those big old chunky ice cube trays on Amazon. So this is a killer cocktail, and it is here for you, made with love from us. At Mai Tai Happy Hour.
I suck at ice. Ice is actually the bane of my existence. I would kill to have a new fancy refrigerator with the crushed ice thing in it. But I have a very, very old, like a retro pink, big pink retro fridge that probably cost a fortune when whoever bought the house bought it. But it is so, like most of the fridge is like a shell. And it definitely doesn't have an ice maker in it. And anytime I like have a cocktail, like I need a cocktail, I have the ingredients, I don't have the ice. And then it's just like, remember me the ice. But you know, ice takes up room in the freezer, especially when you have a little freezer.
Well, this is true. And you also have a family that you have to constantly cook food for. See, when I was drinking, I had nothing but ice in my freezer and maybe a couple frozen pizzas because I was always ready to entertain guests at the drop of a hat. So I had 4, 5, 6, 7 ice cube trays, and I had an overflow bin for ice. So I'd make all the ice, fill up the bin, then I'd refill the ice trays, and then I'd buy a bag of ice on top of that, because the thing you don't ever want to run out of when you're having a cocktail party is ice.
Yeah, I've been pounding back the 50-50 Arnold Palmer hard iced teas lately. That's been my go-to, just because, you know, I just go downstairs. You know, you like when you go from your office, you just walk downstairs. It's a nice commute. It's also kind of a depressing commute. So that's where I'm at right now. It's a lot of Arnold Palmer hard iced teas. And, you know, I got to get some fresh ingredients. I do got to figure out the ice situation. I've been tempted to buy that horribly overpriced mini ice cube maker. Do you know the one I'm talking about? The one that's like $300, $400.
It's way more expensive than something like that should be.
But it makes ice cubes and it makes them like on their own. It's so nice. Siri decided to start copying what we were talking about. Very strange. I'm wearing my smartwatch because I am gotten so obese since the pandemic started that I don't move at all. And I've decided that it's cooler out now. I got my bike fixed up. So the bike with pedals, not the ones with motorcycles, because I still can't get them registered because of the fucking DMV. Riding my bicycle. I'm trying to have it, my watch yell at me to just get up. Like, I'm slothing way too hard. And that's happening now. Also, I've become a big fan of the Piccolo pizzas from Are they from Whole Foods? I think they're from Trader Joe's. Allison's correct me. I'll come back next week. But have you ever had a Piccolo pizza?
I have not.
It's like a long frozen pizza that has half the little mini the grape cherries cut in half, and it's mozzarella. It's really good. I like to put two things of more cheese on it. I like bonus cheese. I'm a big bonus cheese fan.
Hell yeah, who doesn't like bonus cheese?
And then I put Trader Joe's everything seasoning over that. That's what I've been living off of for a lot of.
Well, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's good junk food pizza. It's good for nights when I do my Thai happy hour and I'm not going to cook dinner after this. It's my go-to. So the Piccolo pizza, I'm pretty sure it's Trader Joe's. I will find out by the end of the show where it's actually from. I think we should talk about the David Arquette documentary.
I definitely think we should. Now, for those listening at home who might not be familiar with the thespian David Arquette, David Arquette rose to fame as one of the Hollywood it boys in the mid and late 90s. Most people know him as Deputy Dewey from the Scream franchise. And truth be told, that was kind of the pinnacle of his career, because after he made 4 Scream movies, his career kind of took a turn in the year 2000 when he made a movie with WCW Wrestling called Ready to Rumble. And after that, you kind of would know him from things like Eight-Legged Freaks, or, you know, when he would pop up in cartoons doing the voices of characters, or as an off character at Sharkboy and Lava Girl. So he's went from being on the cover of magazines with people like Johnny Depp and Leonardo DiCaprio and other people like Stephen Dorff, who, you know, he went his own way as well, to making direct to video movies and doing bit parts in TV shows. So when he did do that movie, Ready to Rumble, it was about him being a fan of professional wrestling, him and James Caan's son, Scott Caan, and they went and became wrestlers and won a competition to be in WCW of all things. I mean, everything about this movie says straight to video, except it actually went straight to the theaters. So I did see this movie when it came out in the year 2000 in the AMC theater in Clifton.
So sorry, Hambone.
Dude, I mean, I was really big into wrestling, and I'm like, well, you know, I'll totally go see this movie, and I did, and I could see why some would have considered it the death of his career. Now, that being said, he became, while in WCW, the world's heavyweight champion, which is something you just don't do coming from Hollywood. Like, most people who go and they appear on things like Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, or WCW Thunder, if you're from Hollywood, you may do a little bit. You may throw a punch, do a drop kick, help out a wrestler. But for the most part, you're just there to do something comedic, promote your movie, and hit the road. Not so much for David Arquette, because David Arquette actually got in a storyline where he became the world's heavyweight champion, and he was given the gold belt, the big gold belt. Now, that is one of the most revered titles in all of professional wrestling history, and they just gave it to some schmuck from Hollywood. Did not go over well.
I mean, look, there's a lot of things with David Arquette where I mean, I don't think Royal Rumble is what ended his career. I feel like he was like one of the the rising stars of that era. And I just feel like wrestling is kind of the excuse to talk about his downfall. But I'm not gonna, I don't mean to cut you off. Go right ahead. I feel like there's more to this that we don't know. And, you know, maybe his zaniness in this documentary is partially the reason, and it's not necessarily the wrestling.
Well, I mean, let me throw a couple titles at you here before we get into the actually Cannot Kill David Arquette, which is the name of the documentary. So he does Scream 3 in the year 2000. Ready to Rumble comes out in 2000 as well. The movie that came out directly afterwards, 3,000 Miles to Graceland with Kevin Costner. Granted, like all of these films could have been filmed around the same time, so it's just how the releases come out. And then, you know, after he does wrestling, you know, he does like a family movie, and then he does like bit parts in a couple other movies. He's a character in Eight-Legged Freaks, which is a horror movie that went nowhere. And then that next year, he was Johnny Kiefer on a short-lived Fox comedy called Son of the Beach. So to go from Scream to Johnny Kiefer in just 1 year, that's not the best trajectory for a film career. And from that point on, it was just bit parts in like a Muppet movie called A Very Muppet Christmas. He played bit parts in Sharkboy and Lava Girl. I'm only reading you the titles that you would know, because I don't know if anyone's seen the movie The Tripper, where he played Muff. some bit parts on TV, including parts on his sister's show Medium in 2011, which kind of brought him back to national spotlight, and he did Scream 4 in 2011. Now, granted, you're only doing Scream 4 because you were in the previous three. Had it not been for his role in the other Scream movies, I think he would have just been doing bit parts on his ex-wife series, Cougar Town, and not much else. And even from then, it was just direct-to-video and TV appearances. Up until... I'm still scrolling up here, and I'm stalling to scroll up here because he's not actually been in anything of like
he
note.
He hasn't been in anything of note. Let's be realistic here. And
no, not since Scream 4. He was in Creepshow in 2019 in one of the episodes. Okay, so didn't even go straight to Netflix. Went straight to Shudder. No disrespect there. I do love my Shudder. However, it's not Netflix. So. And Netflix will put anything on. Let's be realistic here. So, I mean, he does a lot of production work behind the scenes. So he doesn't necessarily need to be in the spotlight as an actor. Like he is a producer and a documentarian. However, you know, it's a long way to go from being in the Scream franchise to being Johnny Kiefer. So fast forward to 2018, he decides to go back to wrestling. He feels like he needs to kind of not so much make amends, but kind of get over his own thing where he was just fully rejected by all the boys in the locker room, because he was. I mean, he was a complete outsider. And granted, acting, pro wrestling, being a musician, it's all various shades of carny. However, there are rules, and you just don't jump to the front of the line in any of those businesses. So, you know, he kind of went on a mission to redeem himself in the eyes of not just himself, but in the eyes of the wrestling fan. And that's what You Cannot Kill David Arquette is about.
Yeah, I found this to be a fascinating documentary. I've been following it. I've been following him, like, kind of taping this on The Fringe for the last couple of years, because we were hearing about all these wrestling matches he was at. At first, he thought it was a joke, but then he saw he was actually really wrestling. He was at bar wrestling. He was at the show we went to, the Joey Ryan show we went to. He was at a ton of independent shows, and he basically was trying to pay his dues from the ground up. That was basically what he's going back to. He's like, I cut the line. Now I want to do it the right way. This documentary follows him as he goes to Mexico and learns how to be a luchador. It follows him as he's trying to just work his way through the death match circuit, which I don't know why anybody would want to work the death match circuit. He fights a guy who accidentally, I think it was, I don't know if it was David or that guy, but somehow he nicked, it wasn't a blade job. He actually nicked himself on some sort of barbed wire or glass or something.
Well, and it
cut his jugular.
Yeah, it was a light tube.
It was a light tube. Glass.
It was a light tube. And the guy was like waving it around his neck and accidentally nicked him in the neck. And he was bleeding from the neck, like gushing blood. And it is a very gory documentary.
And it was right at the spot where your jugular could be. So I think he felt it nick. He felt hot warmth come out of it. And probably, it's safe to assume, he had a panic attack because he thought he hit his jugular. I don't think he did, but I did think he hit a gusher. And he didn't know what to do. He, like, got out of the ring. He couldn't find the there was no medics. There was no nothing. He basically worked his way to the back. He finished the match, worked his way to the back, and had Luke Perry and his son drive him to the hospital. It is one of the most it's not gore. I felt like I saw the raw footage, which is a little bit gorier than this, but it was just, I could feel that panic. I've had moments where, I'm sure you've had it too, Hambone, where you've injured yourself. I've fallen off my motorcycle. I've done things where I am on the ground and I don't know if I've broken something or if I've done something that,
definitely,
or I've cut myself and I don't want to take my pants or shirt off to see how bad it is because I know it's bad. Like that fear, when it's not even the pain, it's the shock and the fear of it is terrifying. And I feel, you could see it in his eyes in this documentary where he got that cut on his neck and he's like, oh my God, I'm going to die. I'm going to bleed out. And I just, the only thing keeping me alive is me holding my neck right now.
Oh, you legitimately almost see David Arquette die. Like, no exaggeration. It was not a great situation. He's 51 years old, and he went back in to earn his bones at 51. I want to think that, I mean, granted, you know, it is a great comeback story. The documentary is so well made. It does not blow it on the dismount like the Go-Go's did, and it does not, like, end with a weird shot in a cemetery like the Action Park documentary does. I will tell you, this is one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, whether you're a fan of pro wrestling, whether you're not a fan of pro wrestling. I've run into David Arquette at wrestling shows. He's a lovely man, and he's just genuinely was grateful to be able to kind of get back in there and try to redeem himself. So I've been really looking forward to this documentary, and I think it would have gotten a better release had it not been for COVID.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, because they would have been airing it at all the major wrestling conventions. I would have had a lot more steam about it, but, you know, you got to get it out.
I think this would have made the award circuit, or at least the convention circuit for movies, too. I could have seen this at Sundance. It was a very good
documentary. It would have totally won Sundance. Yeah.
Or at least been there. And it would have had some buzz, so at least it could have made a real theater debut. It's very sad that it didn't. That said, I love that I went into this thinking it was going to be kind of like a B-rated documentary, but they've got his entire family in this movie. They got Patricia Arquette. They've got Roseanne Arquette. They've got his ex-wife. They've got everybody in there.
Yeah. You know,
there's a moment where he's with Eric Bischoff, the former CEO of or the head of WCW, just bullshitting in a room together about why Eric Bischoff made him the champion and why he did this to him. It is so well done. You feel for the guy, especially, look, growing up a wrestling fan, you know there's always been moments where you're like, I want to be a wrestler. I would love to see what it's like to get in a wrestling ring and try to do what they do, and especially with no training. And David Arquette's pretty much our build, or at least, you know, mine, I don't know. I could see myself in his, you know, in his world, but I'm not 51 either. So it's like watching him try to do a Hurricane Rana or tilt a war head sitter. I'm like, how the fuck do you get your leg up there when you're 51 and you're not exactly in the best shape in the world? And he says, he's like, first half of this movie is an alcoholic. Like, he's actually probably worse than me. But like, you watch this and you watch his redemption story, and you watch where he stumbles with the death match, and you watch him come back. I kind of wish, I kind of wish the narrative ended with him having a better comeuppance, almost like going to the WWE and doing something with them at the end. That said, I feel like the ending it got, which is more him just being accepted by the community, was a better ending almost, because it made you, it's really wanted what he wanted to accomplish, which was not just become just a wrestler, but not to feel like he betrayed the industry that he loved.
100% true. I mean, fans are fickle. In the end of the day, you know, there are so few true do or die fans. I mean, at the end of the day, it's fickle. It's the tides of Twitter. It's how people are feeling about you that day. But the fact that his redemption was really honestly made good in the eyes of the people who are in those locker rooms, who are making those towns, I mean, I think that's really where his story should have ended. Like, you know, if, whether he had a WrestleMania moment or not, like, you know, he earned his place this time around. So good on him. I highly, highly recommend the documentary. Pay for it. It's $5. You can get it on Amazon streaming. It's definitely worth your time. Definitely worth watching. Yeah. Very good.
100% agree. The moment I found out it was available, I've been waiting for this for a while, and I thought it kind of died because of COVID. I was afraid that maybe they didn't complete it. But it looks like they had more than enough, you know, material. It was a documentary that was, I think, a little longer than an hour and a half, but it did not feel it. I could have watched a whole another half hour of him just going to different types of wrestling environments and trying to produce that character. I would love to see a similar documentary on, like, Macaulay Culkin, who's also been very involved in the wrestling community. But definitely David Arquette's got the better story because he was... You know, walked into, you know, just to promote a movie, they gave him the world heavyweight title. And that was, I remember it. I remember when it happened. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, it's not Dennis Rodman or some of the other celebrities at the time who at least could feasibly, you know, Dennis Rodman was a pretty big build and tall and could take on a wrestler. David Arquette, not so much. So it is what it is. I mean, it could have been worse. It could have been Master P.
I'm sure they floated that idea probably around the same time. It would not have surprised me.
Yep. The Misfits. I mean, there was a lot. The Misfits may have even held the tag team titles for all I know.
Oh, I'm going to have to Google that one. You won't hear me typing on this episode, but yes.
But to be fair, the Misfits were actually are of the, like, the Jerry Only and Doyle could pass for wrestlers, especially back then, you know, 20, 25 years ago now, like. I would not have been. I was not weirded out by the Misfits being in WCW. Let's put it that way.
No, I felt like it was an interesting pivot. When that happened, I was like, yeah, I run into those dudes and they were jacked. Like, the fact that they weren't pro wrestlers was, I think, the more startling thing to me than the fact that they actually, like, went and did it. Like, just if you've ever been up close and personal near Doyle, like, no matter what size you are, you're a small man.
Yeah. So let's talk. Look, we got one horror movie, one pseudo horror movie. I've been really struggling with horror, with Halloween. I'm struggling with October.
Aww, no, I'm
struggling. Well, because it's probably already canceled. We're trying to figure out what to do. We think we're gonna do Gabe. We think we're gonna do friend houses. We think we're gonna do, like, driving to friends' houses to do trick or treating. Because we don't want to lose Halloween, but we don't know what Halloween's going to look like. We're definitely not doing any trunk or treat with strangers. So yes. I think we're going to try to do that. But I'm also talking just for us. It's like so few horror movies. I mean, we definitely already do our favorite horror movies of the year. But I feel like part of me is like, should we just wait to, like, review horror movies in October? Do we not? But it's starting. I'm getting a lot of, I'm starting to find, I'm culling together the best of lists of horror. Look, horror is a weird category. We've talked about this before, much like you talked about Exotica last week. Like, there's a lot of bad horror. So I try to not have to go through the bad horror. I try to wait until things get decent reviews, or at least interesting reviews, to give them a chance, because there's only so much time in my day. This week,
I've already watched 12.
Well, no, but because I know you're going to be doing 60 days of Halloween, but you also tend to watch older movies that we're not reviewing. You're not just watching the new stuff.
Actually, everything that I've watched came out in the last 2 years.
Newer. Yeah. I do a horror year. I do the 1 year from Halloween to Halloween. So,
I'd like to make a caveat though. All of these movies were, they're new to these services, but they were kind of made Some of them were made a year or two ago. Some of them are made like right now. So it's kind of, they're new to the services. So, they're definitely new to me.
So the foreign movies I find are the ones that are usually from like more like a year or two out, which again, American release is what I usually go on. I find that the more the independent ones sometimes are from the year before, but don't get a real release until this year. I play fast and loose on that too. I know one time you tried to fight me on a thing we're reviewing that was from like November, and I'm like, look, nobody's actually fucking seen this until now, so we're reviewing it. But, you know, I'm not talking about The Exorcist or Hereditary or anything. I, however, I couldn't help but notice, look, I frequent the horror Reddit. I know I shouldn't, but I'm on the horror subreddit a lot. And I always try to see what the top sticky for reviews are, which is like whatever got released this week. And the Cheerleader movie, tons and tons of mixed and weird and loving reviews. What I didn't realize was that it was a sequel to an original Cheerleader movie. And that's why I'm calling you in. I'm calling in a friend because I need you to explain to me what this Cheerleader movie is. The Babysitter. Am I saying Cheerleader? I mean Babysitter.
Oh, you told me to let you play through, so I was just going to let you play through.
No, yes, don't let me play through. I am punch drunk. I am a mess.
But you told me to let you play through.
But the Cheerleader, you know what happens? It's Necromantics. No, because then I get hate mail later saying I didn't realize it and I played through it. Then I look dumber. I'd rather catch it midway. But I was thinking of the Necromantics who killed the Cheerleader. I did say you're handling this episode. Just stop me right now. Go right ahead. Tag.
So here we go. So The Babysitter originally came out in 2017. Now, The Babysitter is... I loved it, and I'm going to tell you why. The Babysitter came out direct to Netflix. It was made to be an 80s-style teen horror movie that takes place in modern times. The tagline on the poster says, "Dream Girls can be a nightmare." It is so much 80s fun. It is a slasher flick. It is a satanic flick. It's a like young romance flick all wrapped up in one, made by director McGee. Now, McGee is very much known for making big, dumb action movies.
Shut the fuck up. Mick G is known for making Offspring videos.
I've heard it both ways, but when you look what he's known for, he's Charlie's Angels, he's Terminator Salvation, he's Charlie's Angels Full Throttle. I mean, he makes these big movies. That's what Mick G does.
And Offspring videos.
And he makes lots of Offspring videos. However, he made this movie for Netflix, and it starred in one of her early roles, Samara Weaving, who we've known now from Ready or Not, and who was just most recently in Bill and Ted Face the Music. So the events of one evening take an unexpected turn for the worst for a young boy trying to spy on his babysitter. He's a little younger, and by a little younger, I mean he's like 15, but his parents still make him use a babysitter. He's got the hots for her. They're kind of best friends. There's some weird pact with Satan going on, and wackiness ensues. So The Babysitter is something I highly recommend to people who are wanting to watch a fun horror movie that's not going to make you think too much about it. It's a big, dumb horror movie for people who want to eat some popcorn, sit on the couch, and not watch something as heady and as fucking horrifying as Hereditary. So this is horror light, y'all. It's horror light.
Let's be very clear. We need to go back a little bit. Mick G made the video for Pretty Fly for a White Guy.
He certainly did.
He made the video for Corn's Got the Life.
He damn well did.
He did the video for Fastballs the Way.
He was the guy. That's where he got his start making music videos. And then they rolled the money truck up to his house and went, beep, beep, McGee, do you want to make a movie? And he was all like, yeah. And he's like, well, here it is.
He made the video for Sugar Ray's Mean Machine.
Yeah, he did.
Like, I can go deep here. This is what he's known. Charlie's Angels. Who's ever watched Charlie's Angels, the movie?
He made the Smash Mouth All-Star video.
He made All-Star? He really did.
Straight up, 2000, the year before he did the first Charlie. I'm sorry, 1999, the year before he did the first Charlie's Angels movie.
Are these movies more comedy? Or are they more horror to you?
The Babysitter?
Yeah,
they're more comedy. They're definitely more. It's light. I mean, it is horror light, and it's made to kind of give you a chuckle and a couple little scares here and there, but mostly it's a lot of reactionary horror, and, you know, it's a very pretty cool, tight story. It takes you through the course of one night, and, you know, there's certainly a very defined beginning, middle, and an end to it. Now, part two takes place. It's called Babysitter Killer Queen. This is what dropped this year, 2020. 2 years after the main character, Cole, survived a satanic blood cult, he's living another nightmare, high school. And yes, I'm reading these straight off of IMDb because they make the best captions for this. and the demons from his past still making his life hell. Damn, that's a good pitch. So this takes place 2 years later. It was definitely written to be a like true sequel to the original, but then they had to make some adjustments because in that time Samara Weaving got really, really big. So she only has a cameo in this movie. However, they did a really good, and I'm telling you this is spoiler free, they did a really good job tying her back in to the movie in a way where it absolutely made sense for her to be there. It was absolutely necessary for her to be there, and they probably got as much as they can afford to pay her out of the deal.
He also made Why Don't You Get a Job, the video by The Offspring. Just wanted me to make that clear.
Yeah, yeah. All the, he made all the joke The Offspring's joke song videos.
Don't be mean. Don't be mean.
What?
Those are what I'd like to call hits.
Yeah, you know, like everyone's got a favorite band, George, and I know The Offspring are yours, so just bully for you.
Keep going. Keep going. Give it to me.
So The Babysitter brings back the original cast with some fun new faces in it, including, I will tell you, I love him in everything he's in. Ken Marino plays the dad in this, and Ken Marino is just awesome. If you watch a movie, Ken Marino's in there, whatever part he's playing, you're going to love that character. A lot of people know him from the TV series Veronica Mars. I mean, he's been in Children's Hospital, House of Lies. He's been Agent Carter. He's been in the Goosebumps movie. I mean, he's been in literally everything. Like, I'm still scrolling on his page trying to find other titles to give you, but he has been everywhere. I highly recommend, you know, if you're looking for a new favorite actor that's kind of like a character actor, it's Ken Marino, man. Big fan of the Ken Marino. He was in Wet Hot American Summer. That's kind of how everyone knows him. Anyway, the movie's great. The movie is a lot of fun. It will not take up a lot of your time, and it will not take up a lot of your bandwidth, which I think is kind of important these days. I mean, you know, knowing with everything going on in the world, an hour and 41 minutes to just kind of sit there, put your phone down, have a few laughs, maybe a couple jump scares, sets you right for the night, especially during this Halloween season, which we all have remember me saying started about 2 weeks towards the end of August, and I'm fully celebrating it now. Halloween till the Monday before Thanksgiving. You heard it here first.
Yep. Overlapping the greatest day overlapping. Ever. Overlapping yeah. The greatest day ever.
Well, yeah. I mean, if something's going to overlap the greatest day ever, George, it should be something like Halloween and not something lame like Arbor Day or whatever.
You're not getting it. What is the greatest day ever?
The day of your birth, my friend.
Thank God. Thank God you got it. You got it. You got it. There we go.
I was teeing myself up there, buddy. It was the day that Zeus chiseled you out of the rock that is Mount Olympus.
Chiseled
you. Brought you to life with a lightning bolt.
He drank that Red Bull. He took up the giant hammer, and he started carving my visage.
Yeah. Instead of Red Bull giving you wings, George, it powered Zeus to make you a demigod, and here you are.
My loincloth is nearly non-existent, but it is powerful. That's my chastity belt. I have no idea where I'm going with that.
Out The Babysitter Killer Queens on Netflix. It is definitely worth an hour and 41 minutes of your time. Lots of fun. I'm ready to talk about something that's not so fun, though, George. Ready to talk about something that wasn't so fun?
What? Are we talking about hashtag alive?
Oh, okay. We'll do that first. That was actually really fun. Since we're
Want to do Mulan.
Yeah, I think I want to end on a good note.
Yeah, we should do Mulan. So Mulan ripped apart in the press. I have a lot of Chinese friends who are saying this is like complete disservice to their culture and nationality and pride, and it's just bad. I'm useless in this one too, mostly because I've never even seen the original Mulan. I felt like it came out during the lost era of Disney, you know, when Hercules and those movies came out. But
so it came out in 1998.
Yeah, the lost era. Yeah.
Because let's be real, what were we doing in 1998? We were going to the fucking Warped Tour. We weren't going to see Mulan in theaters, you know?
Fair.
We're going to shows. We were living that, you know, just out of high school punk rock life, just doing our best. Not old enough to drink in my case, but still partying hard. And so Mulan, original one, came out in 1998. It starred Min-Yeo Wen, and it is kind of a quiet masterpiece for Disney. It's something that never gets enough credit because when people think of Mulan, most people nowadays are constantly reminded of that Szechuan sauce that Rick and Morty kind of brought back to prominence in our country. However, you know, Mulan, good movie back in the day. Did not need a live-action remake. However, Disney was like, you know what we're going to do this year? We're going to do a live-action remake of Mulan, and we're going to film it in China, and we're going to try to make like it, we're going to make it accurate and try to make it like, so, you know, when we release the movie in China, we're going to do like big numbers over there because we're going to be like so like mindful of the product and make it so authentic looking, you know, they're going to love it over in China. It's going to be amazing. The problem is they didn't actually do the proper research for the stuff that they were shooting, and they hired a woman named Nikki Caro, who is from New Zealand, to make this movie.
Yeah, that's a little bit weird.
Yeah, so Nikki is known for things like McFarlane USA, Heavenly Vintage, North Country, The Zookeeper's Wife. Like, not a big action movie that involves a lot of like swordplay and like martial arts. And you could definitely see it in the movie. The movie is it's kind of like put together very poorly. It's very poorly paced. There's nothing that really kind of builds you up to like feel the emotion of like honor. This is a very big story about honor and like, you know, loss of honor for the family and like Mulan's journey to not just get married off by a matchmaker because she wanted to do something different in the world. She knew she was meant for more. And, you know, there are sparks of that throughout the movie, but the movie kind of doesn't really go anywhere. And then when it gets to the point where they're going to do action, and that's kind of what I was waiting for. I'm like, okay, they set this up. It's these army battles, sword play. I'm here for it. So you know how you hate, George, when they do that slow-mo action in like the DC movies? Because like, you know, the person will throw a punch, it'll be very slow for like the whole time leading up to the punch, and then it like will speed up when the action happens. So they do that in here, except they kind of do it wrong. Because they will only slow down the first two steps. So, like, someone will go to run up the wall. You'll see them jump up in full speed. They hit the wall, slow down, one, two, and then it goes fast again. And they constantly, like, did that. Like, everyone who did an action, they would do that, like, two-second slowdown. And you're just like, wow, that sucks. And then most of the action that happens in the movie isn't very good. Like, it's not a well put together action movie for the type of action that a movie like this is supposed to have. You know, I will be very honest with you. A lot of the things that people complain about where it lacks certain authenticity or things weren't happening in the right time period, like I, as an American, would not have noticed that. But what I do notice is that you have this movie that is supposed to be, you know, a very massive story about honor and acceptance and combat, and you just don't really get it right. Like, it was a movie that I like strained myself trying to watch it because it's an hour and 55 minutes long. It's a 2-hour movie, and it feels like a 2-hour movie to the point where, like, in the end, like, the big battle at the end was a very lackluster battle in the end, you know?
It's so weird. As I'm getting older, I'm appreciating hour and a half long movies a lot more.
Oh, yeah. Dude, like, if you can't get it done in an hour and a half, you better damn well be giving me a reason to stick around for two.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I feel like most of the movie watching I do is after 10 o'clock now. It's like 10:30 at night, and I know I need to get to bed by midnight. So another weird thing that's happened with COVID is I do sleep more. I get to, like, both. I'm 40, so I need to sleep. I'm over 40, so I need to sleep more, but also I'm finding myself, because I don't have to commute, I'm sleeping more. So I can start a movie at 10:30, and I know it'll be over by midnight if I do a horror movie or something that's an hour and a half long. And then I can go to bed, and then what happens is literally my alarm clock is set for 8:15, and I have an 8:30 all-hands meeting. I roll out of bed and just roll onto Zoom. I, like, will just fix my hair really quickly. Grab the nearest Hawaiian shirt, and you know, just roll out. But it gives me the opportunity to actually watch more movies now at night, which is why I'm a little bit be able to keep up with you a little more, Hambone.
I know, and I'm hard to keep up because I watch a lot of stuff. But the one thing I really want to talk about here with Mulan is not so much the movie itself, because it stunk, is what it is. However, this was the first movie, the first major motion picture that Disney was releasing that was supposed to hit theaters, and that they were like, you know what? we're going to release it through Disney Plus. We're going to charge you $30 to watch this movie, whereas Bill and Ted came in at a $25 price point. And this was a very big experiment for Disney. This was a very big, like, chance that they were taking, because this movie, the budget of this movie, it should have been in theaters for all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. And here we are. It got murdered by the critics and it got murdered by the fans. And I'm very curious to see what the numbers were at $30 a pop watching Mulan.
Yeah, I think the numbers are out, and I don't think they are as good. I believe they were a little more open about, was it them who were open? I'm getting confused with all the numbers now. I've been hunting. And obviously the Tenet numbers are very interesting. And we've been talking about this pretty much every week, but you gave some numbers last week that looked like might have been misconstrued a little bit. There might have been some lying going on, and not by you. But yeah. It looks like they were significantly lower for U.S. because they counted Canadian numbers in there, too. Let's say U.S. numbers might have been under 10 million. They originally said around 20 million. And then they were hoping that was just going to be like a snowball effect. Well, week two, it did what usually happens week two for a movie, which is it collapsed at least in half, maybe more. And so their numbers are now really bad. And The Atlantic has been doing a great job covering this. There is concern now that these companies, especially to keep their stock from collapsing, might start not revealing prices or sales. Bill and Ted is an example of a company. They haven't released anything yet. We've been looking for that every week. There are no numbers. It is like one or two on the streaming service stuff, but the number.
What does that mean?
What does that mean? And that is very curious. I want to correct you for really quickly, Hambone. Mulan, you're paying $30 for, but Mulan gives you early access to for as many views as you want. So I think that's a little bit different than Bill and Ted, where you had like a window to watch.
Okay. It. All right. That feels better for the $5. Yeah. You know, extra.
And, you know, Bill and Ted, I think you can pay more and you could own it. This one, you basically get early access to it on Disney Plus. How long that's going to be, that window is, I don't know, but it is a little more. If your kid does love it and you're watching it over and over, it does make it a little more worth it. But Tenet, you know, we haven't reviewed it. We haven't seen it. We're not going to the movies to see it. I was hoping. Nope. They were going to do a tandem or some sort of hybrid, but that doesn't look like it's happening. We heard that Christopher Nolan really strong-armed them to put it in theaters. They did. They have that bullshit where they're not putting it in drive-thrus or drive-ins during, you know, if they haven't opened up the regular movie theaters first. So California's not getting it. New York's not getting it. It's insane to think that they're leaving that kind of money on the table. And now that we've seen it, like these movies aren't doing well. This plan to reopen movie theaters, maybe not the smartest move. I think they were counting on a lot of people who, you know, we've seen these ridiculous anti-mask protest videos on being like, oh, yeah, we're going to the movies. No, they're not. And they're probably not the right demographic anyway. So,
well, you know, let's talk about the hybrid model for a second here.
All right,
because
we'll talk.
You actually bring out something really, really kind of important. You know, when we pulled back the numbers a little bit on Tenet. So Tenet, they were saying, is about $9.76 million was the real three-day weekend number for U.S., which doesn't put it that far ahead of something like New Mutants, which only really did about seven, all said and done. So if you're looking at like what a opening weekend looks like for a movie now, during the COVID crisis, it's about $7 to $10 million, and that's $10 million based on Tenet.
That's a blockbuster.
That's a blockbuster. Whereas, like, you know, they said the week after, like, theaters barely made like $500 a theater. You know, like, barely made like $5,000 a theater for the whole next weekend, going 7,000 theaters across the country. Like, numbers are way, way down. I recently, and everyone knows I'm a fan of AMC Theaters. I have been for years. I own stock in the company. I was the Premier Stubs member, so I would be able to go see 12 movies a week. I canceled my membership because there's no way I'm going to the fucking movies. Now, what's happening with AMC Theaters is, while COVID was really kind of going into full swing, even just a little bit before, they started doing their own streaming service through the app where you could rent movies that are just out of theaters, or classic movies even, for like a certain amount of money, depending on the newness of the movie. And as I'm canceling my AMC membership, I'm looking at that going like, man, how much money are they leaving on the table by being like, well, shit, we have a Stubbs reward program where people pay for this membership. We have all these things. We've got points. We've got everything set up in play. why wouldn't they start showing these first release movies and trying to get a piece of that money? Because, you know, when Bill and Ted came out, and Bill and Ted was everywhere, and you could watch it on every service, on your Roku box, on your PlayStation, on Amazon, it wasn't on AMC's app. Because they were like standing their ground by
it not. It wasn't AMC theaters. I mean, they pulled that bullshit where they're like, fine, fuck you, you're gonna be on demand. It's crazy.
But I mean, having a streaming service for your company already in place, like, why not take advantage of that? Look, things are changing. Who knows when things are going to be back to a place where people are going to be very comfortable going to movies on a whim? Because you're not going to see that anymore. It's going to take a lot more mental effort. And I'm not just speaking for myself. When I look at the habits of people going to movies, because I've gone to so many fucking movies for years, like people I'd run into, I just kind of feel like going to see a movie tonight. And I just kind of went out and saw a movie. Like, you're not going to get that kind of, I just felt like going to a movie tonight traffic anymore. You're going to have to be doing more deliberate thinking about going to the movies. So why not be a part of the change as it's happening and evolve the business instead of just being like, you know what, fuck you guys, we're digging our heels in here. We are going to pretend we don't like money.
I mean, let me make a comparison. I mean, this is the music industry all over again, except the technology for them allowed them to adapt a lot better than the movie industry will. It, the fact is it doesn't cost $200 million to make an album. Like, it doesn't. Like, not even close. Even the most expensive albums, how much to cost? I mean, I'm not as in tune, but I cannot imagine an album costs more than $20 million to make. And that includes, you know, I'm sure the marketing arm is a lot bigger, but usually the cost to make a movie doesn't include the marketing, which is all another, it's usually another half, 50%. So that's crazy. I feel, here's what I think is going to happen. I'm predicting this. I'm usually pretty good at my large play predictions. You know, I called the bubble before it burst in 2007. But anyway, I want to say,
you're dead.
I want to say that I feel that the major, let's call it the major label, but let me compare it more to the music industry, the retail music industry. Let's forget about the movie making industry or the all that. We're going to talk about the movie, the delivery system. I feel much like the Sam Goody's, Tower Records, and Virgin Records collapsed, died, nail in the coffin, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Yet we still have a thriving, pre-COVID, hopefully it continues, we have a very thriving music store industry, vinyl record industry. Vinyl records are now higher than CDs are. I mean, once again, it like dominated physical media sales this year. I feel there will still be a place for theaters and theater going. I think the major theater companies are going to collapse. I think you're going to see the death of AMC and whoever else the majors are. It might be the only one, but I think that's going to collapse. And what you're still going to see are the Claridge's, the Carousel's, the Alamo's, the more independent theaters survive, much like the independent record labels and independent bookstores died. Also, when like Borders collapsed, and we still have bookstores because people still want it. It's just going to become a lot more niche.
No, I 100% agree with you. I do think that this is the end for the major theater chains. I think that, and I don't want that. I definitely don't want that to be the case. However, I think if it's going to happen, this is why it happens.
All the October blockbusters have now been pushed out of October. Many of them TBD now. Wonder Woman's been pushed to what, like December?
Christmas,
but nobody's banking on that actually happening now. And a lot of, and I forgot what other one, a couple others have just been moved to TBD. Like, they're not even getting dates. And so you're not going to have tentpoles through the rest of the year. AMC was on life support before that. They can't afford to keep the lights open for these independent movies. They're not even independent. You know, these smaller movies or older movies, they're not going to be able to keep the lights on. I hate it. I don't love the idea of it. I mean, I make fun of AMC, but I don't want to see the movie industry die. But I think if the independents can hold out, I think we're going to see a continuation. The bigger question I think The Atlantic brought up was, is it the death of $200 million movies? I think we got to get our friend Matt on one day when he actually knows how to use Skype and not walk around and smoke while on the air. I think we will. I hate when people make noise as well we're on the air. But all you guests, if you're on the show, just sit there. Just sit there and talk to me. Anyhow, I feel that the $200 million blockbuster might be dead because they can't recoup that cost right now.
Oh, I know, 100%. I agree with you. I agree with you. I think that it is one of those things. It will be resurrected in time. I think that $200 million blockbusters will probably go the way of the dodo for about 5 or so years. And then, you know, it's going to be a big deal when they come back. But, you know, I think we are really coming towards the end of that era. Well, you know, maybe not insofar as big set pieces, yeah, where you have a lot of people and a lot of moving parts. But if things can get shot on green screen with a smaller crew,
it's got to be done,
you know,
better, though. It's got to be done better in the CG currently. I just want to say, look, I don't know if it's ever going to come back, Hambo. Like, seriously, the $200 million movie, if we lose AMC, how do you recoup that cost? Because it's going to be like the music industry has never had the 14 platinum record days are over. Because of streaming will never account for the same amount of, and I don't think any band is making the money they were never able to recoup what you got when you had a blockbuster record. Those days are over. Even like the large artists don't, you know, can't recoup it from physical media. I just don't see how the movie industry will ever be able to make up for the $20 in the theater price on demand when, I just don't know. I don't know. The paradigm has to shift a lot more. Movies got to figure out their prices. Like, they're still figuring that out too. It's like, do you charge $30? Do you charge $20? I think the price point even for a new one might be $9.99.
You know what, man? I don't know. All Tenet has to do is make $400 million to break even. So let's see if it can do. If it could do that, there's hope for the big blockbuster.
That is going to be, there are going to be history books written on Tenet and just why $400 million. No movie should cost $400 million to make. Like, it just, and we're going to be, all right, Jesus Christ, Hambone. $400 million for a movie that they also wanted to be cagey about, like, what it's about. You know? Like,
well, it was $200 million just to actually make the movie. They estimated it's about another $200 million for everything else.
I don't even know what that is because they didn't really start the marketing of it either. So who knows what that means. But, you know, we'll see. And look, there is overseas. Like, they're giving up on U.S. right now. They're going completely overseas. Tenet went overseas first. I have a feeling we're going to see that a lot more because, you know, I just don't know. But it is very telling that even with all the people, you know, this country now is 90% open. And with most movie theaters able to reopen if they wanted to, we are seeing people, even with the majority of anti-maskers, anti-this, and, you know, 50% of the country being, you know, let's call it what it is, pro-Trump and possibly anti-mask, they're not going to the movie theaters. So, you know, I think they were banking on 50% of the country coming back to the movie theaters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. So they're in a little bit of trouble there. I mean, even like the concerts that we see with idiots with they're going after, they're under the belief that they're safe and immune being outdoors. It's gonna be crazy times, but, you know, we'll talk about that another time. I want to talk about #Alive. #Alive just dropped, I think, within the last week or two on Netflix. I am a sucker for zombie movies, but I'm cautious about zombie movies, knowing that there's a lot of garbage out there too, but this one was like, I think it's Korean. It could be Korean, but in Japan.
It is a South Korean film.
Yeah,
made by
the best ones all are.
Il Cho, and it's his first movie. He is a first time director making this
movie. Really?
Yeah. You know, I know what you mean about the quality of zombie movies, because let's face it, zombie movies are the easy. And forgive me, I'm not a filmmaker. However, I will say this: zombie movies, as far as monster movies go, as far as, you know, when you're going to have to put creature makeup on something, zombies are the easiest to maintain because you could put it on normal people and just shit them up a little bit. You know what I mean? You know, it's not like, oh, we have like this crazy demon that's coming out here with like bat wings and like fangs. It's like, no, we just smeared a bunch of stuff on Bob and, you know, Bob's going to like walk around like pretending he's dead. You know, like, you could use a lot of fake blood. You can get away with some stuff.
They don't have to act.
They don't have to act. But you know what? I'm going to actually take the opposite stance on that. I think it's very important how the zombies act, because I think it's possible to overact as a zombie. These South Korean zombies are really intense because they do this kind of like this little dance thing as they're kind of like morphing into zombies. And it's almost like kind of like this weird like thriller dance, but like really like tight and snappy. And it makes it even more freaky.
I agree. I did enjoy the camera work on the zombies here. I don't think it was the acting. I actually thought it was the camera work that they were doing weird cuts. They were doing weird cuts within the motion of the zombie, and I can't even explain how they were doing it, but it definitely made it really cool. It made them look like they were snapping in out of their bodies. I enjoyed the zombies in this. Let's talk a little bit more about the actual movie. It was some, you know, younger kid, doesn't really care about the world, just wakes up, you know, video gamer, likes his EDM, and he doesn't realize that there's an apocalypse going on outside. He calls up his mom. His mom's like, apocalypse is going on, take a look outside, all hell's breaking loose. The bad part is, and this was a great foreshadowing, was she like left a note going, hey, we ran out of food, I need you to go to the store. And oh, he can't get out of his apartment, and he has no food. So at least it kind of sets up for why he's like, from go, he's starving. And a good amount of this movie takes place in his apartment, and him slowly losing his mind because he's starving, he's thirsty, the water got turned off, and it's watching him fall apart and go mad. The zombies are fast zombies. The zombies are very trained from trained to Busan zombies. They're very well done. The costuming, everything is great on this. I thought at first they were just going to be like, I thought it was going to be like B-rated zombies where it's like, oh, they kind of look like you because they haven't really melted yet. Now they're fucked up. It's great. And he's got to get out. He finds, he finds a mate across the way that he just like reaches out. She's like completely across the complex. And you know, hilarity ensues. No, not really. I mean, it's really kind of dark because, you know, there's a lot of zombies and they can't gather. And they're fast zombies. Fast zombies suck. Like, I would just be dead in fast zombies.
Oh, the worst. Yeah.
You know, it's like 24 days later, 28 days later, 28 days later.
28 days later.
That's the movie that really brought us fast zombies.
You know, I got to check the date on it. It's either 28 days later or it's Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead.
No. It was 28 days later beat Zack Snyder, but those were also fast zombies. But it was around the same time. And that was holy shit. Because that's where, I'm sorry, zombies aren't scary when they're just like the scary part is the herd mentality, which is largely done in like Walking Dead. That is kind of scary, but you're still like, I can run faster than you. You're melting. Like, you're fucked. But, like, the fast zombies, the, like, unhindered, I got nothing but primal urge zombies. Like, I'm fucked. Just go ahead. Just, you know, blow my brains out before I turn. Because,
like, I think that's my problem with it, George, is that, like, I don't run. I can't run. I get winded. Like, I can't imagine that if I get bit and turn into a zombie that I'm suddenly going to be able to sprint. Because, yo, where is that now? Like, where is my 4-minute mile now? Like, I don't want to have to wait until I'm like, you know, worm food to be able to be like, oh, here I go. I'm gonna get the bronze medal on this one. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I that's the part that always gets me. And that's why I found movies like 28 Days Later and the first Dawn of the Dead so terrifying. Here, yeah, it's like every time they open the door, and they seem to like Hulk out in this too. Like they turn like toaster size and angry, but they're very aggressive. They will destroy you. It looks so hopeless. And, you know, they use a lot of modern technology to help talk to each other. There's like drones. I love the use of drones in this. I love how they really used modern technology instead of it being like, oh, a horror movie's going to suck if there's cell phones. And that's true for the most part, especially when it's like serial killer creeper types. But, you know, in a zombie apocalypse, there probably isn't cell phone service, except for maybe Verizon. But there is definitely like drones and things like that where you can use to your benefit. And I like how they like really take that to good use. Even the ending, the actual ending, how it ends.
Don't spoil it.
Yeah, I don't want to blow it. It's because of social media, and they make it clear that it's about social media. Why it's called hashtag alive is something I didn't realize at first until I watched it and paid closer attention. So I really like that about it too. I didn't really care for the main character much. He was kind of one dimensional. I did like his counterpart on the other side. You know, I liked that they threw a little bit of a left hook, there was a little bit of twist towards the end, like in the final third, even though I saw it coming, I enjoyed that a little bit. The true horror being humanity, not zombies, has been done.
Always is.
It's done, but it was done well. And I like it. I love the movie. I thought it was a great hour and a half. And I thought it tried new things and it worked.
Yeah, I love the way that they, and you have heard me on this show in the past say that I hate modern technology in horror. However, in something like this, they really did lean into why technology works in horror. And I think that that's what really sets this movie apart from other horror movies, where it makes sense that they're doing the things that they're going to do. So I highly, highly recommend this movie. I watched it dubbed. I put it on and immediately it starts playing with an American dub for the dialogue, and I just didn't bother changing it. And it was fine.
Yeah, well,
it's a zombie movie.
Exactly. I won't give you shit because it's a zombie movie. That's basically where I was going with that too. I mean, there was very little dialogue, so it didn't really affect anything. Most of it's grunting and moaning. But very good. It was a good start. You know, we're kicking off the fall season. Let's call that the fall season of horror. And I'm excited for that. I have a ton of movies I want to see. I want to see One Bedroom. I want to see I saw
that was great.
Oh, it was great. Okay, I might do that tonight. I saw Swallow, which is depression horror, which is a whole category unto itself.
I'll still clear.
We will talk about that though. I want to talk about that during October. Please write that down because I can't remember anything anymore, and you're now the writer of things. I feel like we need to talk about depression horror because I feel that we are so anesthetized to horror that to us nowadays, and I mean us like you and me, but just in general, I feel horror needs to be more than monsters nowadays, and I feel like the Babadook kind of kicked all that off back when, and movies like Swallow continue it well. So yes, very, very great horror, not like Hereditary, which is like the artsy horror, which is a whole different thing we should talk about. But I'm excited for Halloween. We just got to get through September, the worst month of the entire year.
Hey, man, September is flying by.
Wake me up when September ends, to quote the great Billy Joe Armstrong.
You said that. So I'm ready to pull my AC out. I'm ready for the fall. I'm ready for denim weather. I'm enjoying taking walks in the evening now again. Bring on the fall. Bring me all the peanut butter cups. I am ready.
Oh, wait, really quickly. I got to talk about it. Give me 2 minutes. Give me 2 minutes.
Go, 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 go.
So when I went to Wildwood a couple weeks ago, when I went on vacation, we went to Wildwood, and it was nice. Wildwood was oddly dead, I think, because the Pennsylvania school districts went back early, and I didn't know that. So it was nice being able to beach and socially distance. But Wildwood has a peanut butter store, Hambone.
Say what?
They have a peanut butter store. Literally just peanut butter. Like, I walked in there. I'm like, oh, just like me and Gabe walked in. And it was like, just here's all my money. Just take, I got peanut butter, chocolate, crunch blend, like peanut butter, like to spread, like chocolate and peanut butter, just to spread.
Perfect together.
Oh my God. I got a cappuccino peanut butter cup. I got a cappuccino peanut butter cup, a big one too. And I got a cookies, all the chocolate chip peanut butter cookies you can imagine. It was like the greatest place ever. Definitely, if you go to Wildwood, check that out. I got nothing more to be excited about other than, you know, we're doing another excellent show. Thank you very much, Hambone. I think I survived this one.
You did it. You're the best.
Got to survive this week. Fall for phones, guys.
It's bring you down.
All the phones in the fall, and I'm just not ready for the amount of work I have to do. But, you know, keep an eye on me. Hambone, how can the kids reach you?
You find me on the Twitter at Hambreaker. I tweet about board games. I tweet about cute animals. I tweet about Dungeons & Dragons. Great place to hit me up if you've got a horror movie suggestion. Just tweet at me. If I haven't seen it, I'll probably watch it. Unless it's depressing and weird, then I might watch it. You can also find my day-to-day adventures in podcasting and in life over on Instagram at John Hambone McGuire. I am really trying to post more pictures than just ads for our show. I will show you the games I've been buying and playing at home. That's pretty fun too. George, where can the people find you?
You can find me at my house, you know, staring at my Fallout game that I bought just to play with Hambone, and he never played with me ever. Didn't even try. Just left me hanging.
We set it up.
So sad, but we will
one
day. Years
later, the apocalypse happened. We're getting there. We're going to get there, buddy.
Yeah, that's where I'm at right now. No, you can reach me at GLK Creative on Instagram, mostly rock and roll and tiki mugs and my kids. I'm trying to post more tech videos on there, too. I feel like it's a good outlet for that. You can reach me at Twitter. That's mostly tech and pop culture. And you can reach me at cultofgeorge.com. That's my blog. MyTieTV.com is where our whole archive is. One day we'll do video. I'm working so hard trying to figure this out. You have no idea. I spent like an hour with George this week trying to like brainstorm how we could do this without spending too much money. It will happen. You need to rate, review, and subscribe. I just noticed we have a lot of reviews. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Most only one negative one. We're at a 4.5. Whoever you are, fuck you. Fuck you. Yeah. You know what? Oh,
jerk.
You know, he was probably a Ghost fan. That's where we screwed ourselves a little bit.
Sounds about right.
You can we love you guys. We appreciate all the feedback. We love getting all the good responses. You know, let us know what you want to hear. Let us know what you want to talk about. If you want to do more music, we see that seems to do well. But sadly, there's not a ton of music coming out for the review. We got, Bob Mould in like a week or two. We got to check that out. Did you know there was a new album coming out until I told you?
I did because you told me about it.
I was so excited when I saw that. I'm like, I've started doing, looking at that punk rock website to buy records. They have I'll send you a link to it, but they have actually everything coming up through the rest of the year, so I can plug that into our calendar. We will do music, we will do wrestling, we will do pop culture, we will do horror and Halloween. We are so psyched. Hambone, take us out.
Everybody, remember, be nice, wear a mask. Aloha.